Welcome back in, everyone, to another fantastic new episode of Whisper in the Wings. We have a wonderful show to be sharing with you today. It's got an incredible cast, an incredible production team, and I'm sure you will all recognize the title if you are a book lover as well. Joining us today, we have the director, Erwin Moss, and the performer, Christopher Domig. They are part of the show Tuesdays with Maury that is being done March 1st through the 23rd at St. George's Episcopal Church. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting seadogtheater.org. Anyone who is a literary lover or has grown up with books such as Flowers for Algernon definitely has read this book, Tuesdays with Maury, and the play is even better. And we are so excited that we have these two great artists joining us to tell us more about this production. So with that, let us welcome on Erwin and Christopher. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to be here.
Good to be here.
I am thrilled to have the two of you here. I'm so glad that we are talking about this great play. You both are part of Tuesdays with Maury. Erwin, can I start with you? And for anyone out there who doesn't know this, can you tell us a bit about what this show is about?
So Tuesdays with Maury is written by Mitch Albom. And so it really is kind of a biography of his own personal experience. Mitch Albom is relating a story or a memory, really, of his old professor, Maury Schwartz, at Brandeis University. And after 16 years after graduation, he discovers that his old professor is basically dying of ALS and decides to go and visit him to say goodbye. But what he didn't realize is that he ends up visiting him every Tuesdays all the way until Maury dies. And so really, it's a story of love. It's a story of mentorship, it's a story of illness, it's a story of death, but that's really this bond between these two people is beautifully written in the book and also beautifully created in the play. That's a short version.
I love it. That's fabulous. Christopher, I want to come to you now, because not only are you a performer on the show, you're the artistic director with the producing company. How did you come upon this piece?
Well, I had read the book years ago, and then shortly thereafter the play, so I was familiar with both. And I remember liking both. You know, it had an effect on me when I first read it. And then I was actually, you know, it was during the great pause that we all went through during the pandemic, and I was rereading plays, but my headspace was, you know, thinking about the demographic that was most affected by the pandemic, and that certainly was the elderly that were getting sick and dying at rates that were just catastrophic, right? And we didn't know what to do about it, and it was very traumatic. And I, for some reason, I started thinking about plays that dealt with either death or dying in sickness at old age. Of course, Tuesdays with Maury has nothing to do with directly with the pandemic, but that's sort of where my headspace was at when I picked the book up again. But then I read it and I just fell in love again with the universal questions that it asks and the theme of friendship and mentorship. And so that's really how I picked the book up again. And I'd be happy to talk more about this sort of very unique friendship that exists between Erwin, myself, and Len, and how that all came about. But I knew that I wanted to do a reading of the play. Our theater company does a lot of readings. We stumbled into our reading series in part because we didn't have the money to do 2 to 3 productions a year, but we did have the money to produce 6 to 8 readings a year and then have conversations after. And that's all tied into the mission of our company. So it was about 2 years ago that I approached both Len and Erwin and said, look, I'd like to do a reading of this play. And it was our really first season back from the pandemic. And so they both said yes, and we did that reading April of 2022. And it just was such a joyous event and just powerful evening of theater. And we got a number of people encouraging us to sort of pursue this as a production. And then it was a little bit of a dating game, even though Len has worked with us for three times before, it's always been in a reading context. And I was a little bit afraid to ask Len to do a production with me because I don't bring much leverage to his career. He brings all the leverage to our little establishment and my career. And I think he was asking me to ask him. I was asking for him to tell me. And Erwin stepped in and said, listen, I think you guys should talk about what this might look like. And so we just, the three of us started talking about what a production of this could or would look like. And that's when the journey started in earnest. And we started everything you do that a small company needs to do if you're going to put up a production. We started fundraising and planning and dreaming around what this might be like. And it's certainly been a journey. It hasn't been a direct line from there to here. But I think that we are all extremely grateful that we landed where we have, because it's really beautiful. It's a beautiful thing we've created in a really gorgeous space. And I can expound on any of that if you want me to, but that's sort of for starters. Let's go there.
That is wonderful. I love that. I love how your company has come around to put this show on. This is amazing. Erwin, I want to come back to you as the director. I want to know, at the time of this recording, I mean, it's opening night. It's March 1st. So what has it been like developing this piece and getting it up on its feet?
Well, yeah, no, it's been a great journey, as Chris already relayed. Chris and I have worked on many occasions together, and Len and I know each other already for a very long time. And so I actually introduced Len to Chris for their first reading. And so it was really quite a great coming together of friends, kind of like Chris said already. And this play itself has a quite important meaning for me, because I read the book back in the Netherlands. I'm from the Netherlands. And I read the book in the late 90s when it came out, a couple of months after my own father died at a pretty early age. And so the book had an incredible impact on me, particularly in that time. This whole idea of partnership, this relationship between an older man and a younger man, and, you know, the mentorship, what do you learn? So I was definitely questioning, like, what am I going to miss out on now? What lessons am I not going to get? So the book has always had a big impact on myself, as it has on many people. So when Chris called me and that it was on his mind as well, and we were just talking about it, we definitely felt this was the right way to go also with Len. And so since that reading, which really was an extraordinary evening. I mean, people were really inspired by it and were pretty much telling us, like, this should be a production. We've basically since then started to kind of work on it with the three of us to keep reading it. And it's been a long journey, which I think was really important for this play. Also with the people involved, we all have quite busy schedules, but let's also be honest, Len is at a older age, he's at a mature age that you might not be able to do this in a 3-week setup like often is the case in these situations and in equity rules where you have to put up a show in 3 weeks and then you pretty much have to go. These things were not available for us. It was not possible for us to do it in that sense. And so it's been a very nice and gentle journey. And as so often, life imitates theater, imitates life. I really have seen what this piece is about. I saw happening in front of my own face during the process. There was a beautiful mentorship, I would say in both ways, not only from Len towards Chris, but also the other way around, and a gentility between these two souls that was really beautiful to witness as a director in part of the process. But of course, even more so in relation to this piece, that so much is about that. And so that's been really, really fun. It's been really beautiful to watch that. And so, yeah, so we've been working on it for quite a while. Very gentle, coming together with a coffee, reading it again, you know. And then, of course, putting it up. I mean, Chris's company is based in this pretty extraordinary space in the church, close to Union Square, just east of Union Square. And there's been other places in that inside that building that we've worked before, but particularly this chapel that we're in right now is just kind of a dream come true to be able to work in a space like that. Because when do you ever get to work in Manhattan in a space like that? I mean, let's face it, you normally, if you want to rent a space like that, it would cost you millions of dollars probably. So it's for this extent of period. So it's been really kind of like a blessing and a really beautiful sense, because the play, of course, has a certain spirituality to it. So that means it's also quite interesting to do it in a space like this. However, I will say too, as a director, that also came with a lot of challenges, because, you know, you're not in a theater and there is no grid to hang lights off. And how are we gonna light this place? Because it was very complicated. And so I will have to say, and then also like the echoey of the space that you're in, of a church, how is that gonna be for the sound? So I will really say our team, the sound designer, Eamon Goodman, and our set and lighting and costume designer, Guy Delancey, really, really pulled off a fantastic journey in these last couple of weeks to make it all fit into this space. And to complete our team, because I now mentioned already two of them, to complete our team, we also have Chris White that is taking care of the mics, because I do think it's important in this space, and particularly also with an audience that I'm sure we're attracting that might be a little bit more mature as well, to have audibility, of course, in a space like this. So really fantastic that he has been able to come on board. And our stage manager, James Fitzsimmons, who also has a track record, I will say, in this business. So it's really been a fantastic team coming together to make this really work well.
That is so wonderful to hear. I love all that. And I can just imagine this beautiful space that you were all in and telling this heartfelt story. I gotta say, it sounds like it amplifies it that much more. I want to go back to you, Christopher, and I'm curious to know, what is the message or thought you hope audiences take away from your show?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure there's just one. You know, anytime you do a revival, I mean, anytime you do theater, you're always asking yourself, why this story now? Often with new plays, the play has been written within a context often where it answers a certain cultural demand, and that question is answered sort of naturally. With a revival, you know, it's just so much work and time and money that goes into this. You really need to say, is this the story we want to tell right now with this group of people? And so we said yes to that. Again, for me, it came out of we were all going through this time of people dying and being sick. And so that was sort of a natural reason why I thought it was relevant. There's also a loneliness epidemic. You know, if you guys have been paying attention to the Surgeon General, the United States is talking a lot about it. All the statistics and the reports show that we're generally becoming more lonely. And then particularly men have a problem of keeping and sustaining close friendships, more so than women. That has also been shown. So that was interesting to me. I thankfully have had very strong friendships in my life and strong mentorships of professors that have, similarly to Maury, sort of poured into me over the years. So this was something that I was happy to dive into, but culturally speaking, I felt like it is a question that is looming large and needs to be answered and is addressed in the play. Mitch is not someone that likes to hug or touch or share emotions, and Maury is the opposite, but he's also very wise. And so there's a challenge of worldviews. But as of late, the thing that I'm really caught up in, and Irvin has been instrumental in helping me sort of get there, is that Mitch, it's a memory play. Mitch tells this story and relives and sort of conjures up Maury and the mentorship that Maury was to him. But I've realized that the big lessons we learn, we don't usually learn overnight. It's not, oh, I have a problem with compassion. There, now I don't. You know, I have a problem with loving others and putting love first. You know, it's an ongoing process. And in my own life, I reflect on friendships and relationships and experiences, right? And as I grow older and I reflect again and again on certain things, I grow in my own dialogue with those memories. And so what I think, what I am getting to is this idea of going on this journey every night and looking again anew for what is it that this man and this relationship to this mentor means now for me. And that to me is very interesting, because at least Mitch has a model or a friendship that he can go back to and sort of dialogue with, right? And that's also something that is lacking so much culturally. We're social creatures. We become what we surround ourselves with. And what are we currently surrounding ourselves with? Well, tribalism and identity politics and black and white. And if you don't agree with everything that I, you know, so then where's the alternative way of living life, right? Where are the people or the places or the structures that challenge our way of thinking and living? And for Mitch, that person is Maury, but it's the gift that keeps on giving. So it was clearly very, very effective and instrumental when Mitch experienced it. But the reason why Mitch goes back and has to go back is that there's always more to mine. And so that to me, I think that's sort of where I'm landing on. And that's sort of giving me a really good amount of things to keep working on as we do this in front of an audience, because you kind of want to keep working on something. And so I'm excited to keep looking for the different ways that Maury is challenging Mitch to sort of change his outlook.
What I would add to that, if I may, what I would add to that, and something that we definitely discovered in our process also, is that for me, I mean, personally, again, going back to why this play really struck a chord with me, is this idea of why are people that passed on, why do they linger in our minds? I mean, might be quite obvious why they do, but then particularly, why do certain conversations you've had with them, why do they keep coming back? Why do they knock in our heads and say, hey, that conversation, but why? They're trying to tell me something. They're trying to point in a certain direction. And I think what we discovered doing it, that's really something that struck a chord for me, because I do really think in this piece also, Mitch kind of lost his purpose a little bit. And so I think in a large way, Maury is trying to point him. He's not saying it outright, but he's trying to point him to like, hey, are you really, really satisfied? Are you really happy? And, you know, at some point, Mitch will discover, yes, I kind of need to go a different direction here. So for me, it's also very much about refining your purpose in life.
That's wonderful. I love both of these ideas that you are trying to communicate through this show. That's so wonderful. My final question for this first part is, who do you hope have access to this piece? And Erwin, I'm going to start first with you on that.
I mean, I hope everybody has access to this, obviously. One of the things that we're definitely dealing with, just in reality of working with an actor that's nearly 85, it brings up the question of ageism, honestly. We work in a medium that is often very focused, and not only the medium that we're in, but society is focused on the next and on the new. And how do we treat our elderly? Are they kind of discarded, or do we really appreciate the talent and the experience that they bring? So I think having that as part of what this piece is about also, but it's also literally live in reality in front of us with Chris and Len. I mean, similarly to the characters in the play, they are about 40 years apart. So it's really quite riveting to have that be part of this piece as well. So with that said, I think people at an older age will find a lot of links for them, I think. But then similarly, those people that are younger are also looking at the mentorship. What are the mentorships that they think of? Who are the people in their lives that they look up to? So I think in that sense, it's really a very, very open, broad piece of theater that will appeal to many, many people. Maybe to add, we're a very international bunch, our whole team. So I would say like that might be of interest to some people as well, more from an international standpoint. But yeah, the team is predominantly not American. So I think that that might also be something that might be of interest.
Wonderful. I love that. Christopher, I'm going to come to you to close this first part out with the same question. Again, you're also the artistic director of the company presenting this. So who all do you hope have access to this piece?
Well, I mean, I think I can only echo what Irvin said. I mean, you hope that as many people as possible will find ways into this piece. I mean, there's the content question, and there's of course the sort of administrative side of things. As a company, you know, our reading series, and certainly for this production, we've always tried to make tickets affordable. And if people approach us and say they can't afford a ticket, then we comp people. I mean, it is something that's important to us, that we can make it socioeconomically affordable to people to attend. You know, but in terms of content, I think this is sort of universal, you know. So it's one of those things, that balance of artistically feeling the need to tell a story. As artists, we need to follow that impulse. And then, of course, there's the hope and the sort of trying to translate that impulse to sort of sharing the news and inviting folks to come, you know. But I think that as I said before, because it's so much work to do something, if the core team doesn't have that fire and the belief that this play is important, then any number of sort of outreach doesn't matter, because ultimately we're serving the artwork. And we're serving it in that we're excited about it. And then we hope that that sort of passion for this project spills over and brings people in. So yeah, we'll see. You know, we're about half sold out at this point, which is a real feat before performances. And we hope that that every ticket sells.
I remember a piece in the Netherlands. I'll just say this. I remember a piece in the Netherlands that was also kind of it was a new developed piece, but about like a relationship between a youth and a senior person. And there they actually decided that whoever buys a ticket, if you're under, I don't know what the age was exactly, but under 25, you had to come with somebody that's over 65 and vice versa. So I'm just thinking, even for the audience that is listening, it might be interesting to think like, hey, I'm interested, but maybe let me bring somebody that is either older or younger to experience this with. So that's another thought I had.
The second part of our show, we'd love to invite our listeners to get to know our guests a little bit better, pick your brains, if you will. And I want to start by asking the two of you, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites? And Christopher, can I start with you on that, please?
Oh, gosh. That's a hard one to answer. I love music. I'm listening to a lot of Peter Gregson. He's a minimalist. I love Arvo Pärt and Max Richter. I mean, these are some of the composers I listen to, though musically I listen to more classical in the morning, and then it goes towards alternative rock, and it ends with jazz in the evening. So that's sort of my arc with music. I mean, there's so many artists that I am inspired by. I guess I'll bring it back to sort of the mission of our company, which is to tell stories of alienation and reconciliation, I experience the world in a certain way. And I experience it as the data of my experience is that there's darkness and brokenness and despair, and there's also hope and grace and sort of reconciliation. And they're always at interplay with one another. And when artists, be it movies or stories or plays, give voice to both. And by no means is it always 50-50. Life isn't equal that way. Life is chaotic and not predictable. But I am very much drawn to artwork that in some way have that those two poles at tension. And it's ultimately why we sort of gave that tagline to our theater company. And I hear that in music, and I'll hear that in, I mean, again, this play does it for us. Another project that Irvin and I are actually working on is developing a play about the Holocaust survivor and author of Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl. Another great example of someone where the horror of the Holocaust is juxtaposed with this person's belief that that horror isn't the last word on life. So, I mean, yeah, I have to stop there. Otherwise, I mean, I could mention hundreds of names of people that have influenced me in the theater and film and writers, but that's sort of my approach out into the world, is looking for stories and art that hold these two poles in tension. And if they do, I'm drawn to them. And yeah.
That is a wonderful list there. I love that. Irvin, what about you? What are who inspires you?
Ay, ay, ay. That's a tricky one, because I agree. It's like, oy, there's so many things. But I think what Chris and I have in common is that we both actually are very much inspired by music. I think as many people are, of course, but particularly in the way we work also. And I always say, for example, like I look at a script, at a theater script, almost always as a musical score. So I definitely also get very, very inspired by various composers and music, particularly in the classical scene. I've always still wanted one of my projects that's out there, that might be my last one, who knows, has always been this idea of doing something with all the requiems of the world, which is kind of fitting with the piece that we're doing here. But so music is definitely a big one. I also get very inspired by designers, and interestingly enough, a lot also by choreographers. Hove Schechter, Gregory Mokoma, the way they work and the vision that they put out, and particularly also from a design standpoint, I think is very, very interesting. So yeah, so it's both from a visual standpoint and a musical standpoint. And sometimes people tend to say that a lot of the work I do, or particularly looking at transitions and stuff in my work, tends to be cinematic. And I think part of that is true, but sometimes I think what you're actually pointing at is music, is musical. It's a musical kind of transition. So those two, I would say, is the biggest one. I mean, there's a lot of names in there, but that I could mention, but those two mediums or elements.
That is wonderful. I love all of that. Some great inspirations from the two of you. I want to ask now, what is your favorite part about working in the theater? And Irvin, if I can start with you on that.
Oh, that's very, very easy. The my favorite part, honestly, is collaboration. I mean, that's the sole reason why I'm in this business. I mean, not the sole. I mean, I shouldn't have said that that's the sole reason. It's more the main reason, because of course I love selling stories, but looking at many other art forms that tend to be created in a vacuum, that tend to be created by people separate by themselves. What I love about theater, and I think theater in and of itself is probably one of the most collaborative art forms that is out there. And that's really something that I appreciate a lot. And probably also why I went into the direction of directing, because I felt sometimes when I was acting before, did other things, I felt like I was a part of that piece, but as a director, I felt like I had to connect all of it. And that's something that I really appreciate and love doing. So that would be absolutely my number one.
That is a fantastic answer. Christopher, I saw you nodding along. I'd love to know your favorite part about working in the theater.
It's people. It's the people. I mean, it's what Irvin said. It's collaboration. You know, we talked about mentorship, and that's one of the themes of this play, and it's one something that I've experienced in life. But the artistic community, by and large, does that for one another, right? There are values at play that I think there's a currency. There's a couple currencies with most of the artists that I respect, and that is the stories that we're telling and the relationships we're building. There is very rarely any money or any fame. So you're really doing it because there's a story that has captivated your heart and mind, and it's relationships that challenge you and bring out the best in you. And that is, to me, the beauty of, again, there are toxic artists out there, toxic relationships, which always breaks my heart, because I am always thinking, at the end of the day, you're telling a human story, but you're going to burn all these bridges along the way, and you're going to alienate all these people who are going to say, I'm never going to work with you again because your ego got the best of you. Like, what's the you know, what's the point of that? But I've been thankful, very grateful to have been mostly in very good relationships, and it's sort of a collective inspiring journey that sort of, yeah, it's, there's something very childlikeness that we're doing, right? I mean, all we're doing is telling a story, and we're putting lights up and sound, and there's Len, and there's Urban, and there's myself, and there's all these other people, and we're doing what kids do, just we're slightly older. And if that joy and that sort of curiosity can stay alive, which it does for the most part in the settings that we've been working in, that is invaluable. So that's what keeps me in this crazy game. And there are days when I think this is, we're all on the brink of insanity, because it doesn't really make any sense. And I'm sure you can relate to that too. Like, as theater makers or artists, you're just like, why am I so obsessed with wanting to make this? It makes no worldly sense. But then there again, we are. It's the same dialogue Maury and Mitch are having. I mean, we can play into the worldly values and then go out and try to make the most money. We're all smart enough to have gone into other careers. And that's something I tell myself. I could have gone into finance. I didn't go into finance. I didn't want to go into finance. That wasn't something that was ever that important to me. Don't get me wrong. There are days where I'm like, maybe I should have gone into finance a little bit because financial stability is important. But, you know, here we are on this journey, and I don't think we've gotten tired of it. And it's really a beautiful thing to have friends and colleagues like Irvin and Len, where you just keep working together and you keep creating, you know, a vocabulary of work and aesthetic that you can build upon. So it's people.
That is a fabulous answer. And I 10 out of 10, absolutely agree completely. Well, we've now arrived at my favorite question to ask guests. And that is, of course, what is your favorite theater memory?
I mean, there are really quite a lot, but I have to think in this sense that I would have to go all the way back, really all the way back. And it probably is a memory of when I was like 5 or 6 in my village in the Netherlands, which was kind of like the first time, not the first time, in school I did something before, but where we worked in kind of like, you know, community theater sense. And I was working with 2 of my best friends, and we did this play, of course, for very little kids, but it was called like, I'm not afraid of that, not death, but of that. I'm not afraid of that. And the 3 of us were kind of going around this castle. So that was the story. And that is a memory that sticks really, really big with me, because I think that is the moment where I was like, I want to keep doing this. I want to keep creating this kind of stuff. I want to keep doing this. So that's the first thing that popped in my mind when you said that. But then, of course, if I'm talking about experiencing theater by watching theater, gosh, there are so many productions that have had an impact on me. So I think it's unfair to just name one.
No, I love that memory. We love a great origin story. So thank you for that. Christopher, how about you? What is your favorite theater memory?
Yeah, I'm with Urban. I mean, there's so many moments that move you at a particular moment, but I've had a number of ones that move me equally in different ways. I couldn't, you know, tell you. I'll give you an origin story too. I grew up in Austria, and when I was 15, there was a production. It was sort of a state-funded production with students, but it was various schools could audition for it. And it was a German version of Bilbo, the Hobbit. And I got cast as Bilbo. And it was a play with music. There was some singing in it, but it wasn't a musical. It was, you know, mostly a play with some music and songs. And they rented out this new theater. And it was like a professional production, and the television came to interview me, and it was such a thrilling world. I mean, it was the world of Tolkien. You know, Tolkien sounds a little bit more drastic and serious in German than he does in English, but the experience of telling stories in front of an audience, that really sort of cemented it for me. I mean, that's where I caught the bug, as we say.
That is a fantastic memory as well. I love that. Another origin story. Both of you, thank you for those memories. Those were wonderful. Well, as we wrap things up, I'd love to know, do either of you have any other projects or productions coming down the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
There's quite a few. But yeah, no, I'm besides directing here in New York, I work quite internationally quite a bit. And I run an organization called the Pan-African Creative Exchange, PACE for short, which is basically promoting work from the African continent and the African diaspora. And our call for submissions of work is actually now out. Our next showcase will be in 2025 in South Africa. So that's something that I'm very busy with. With regards to another production I'm working on, is something that also has been a very long journey, but really inspiring production or inspiring work, is with a disabled visual artist in Adelaide, Australia. This summer I'll go there to make the production, but it's somebody with MS who is no longer able to paint with her hands, really, and therefore started painting with the wheels of her wheelchair. And we're making a production out of that with her. She is the person. But so it's kind of like a visual arts performance installation, if you will. And I think that's my next project.
That's incredible. Wow. Christopher, what about you?
One project that's ongoing is also with Irvin, is this the Frankel project. We're very excited about it. It's very fulfilling and challenging in a certain way. We're trying to adapt this great book, but we're not doing a biopic of it. We're trying to capture the experience of reading Man's Search for Meaning on stage. And so there's audience interactions, and there's stories of my own life, and there's parts of Frankel. So it's sort of a tapestry of sorts that we're creating that I'm very excited about. So that's ongoing. Look, there's various projects that I'm dreaming about that I would like to develop, but none of which that I could yet give sort of a time frame around. So one project at a time for me right now. So Tuesdays with Maury it is. The next 4 weeks, and then we'll head to the next thing.
Fantastic. Well, it still sounds like you both have some irons in the fire that we need to keep tabs on. And that is a great lead into my final question, which is, if our listeners would like more information about Tuesdays with Maury or about either of you, perhaps they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Well, they can go to our website, which is www.seadogtheater.org. That's SEADOG, theater spelt ER.org. And there they will find all they need to know about tickets and information to our production right now, as well as our company mission and the work we've done in the past and upcoming work.
Wonderful. Well, Irvin, Christopher, thank you so, so much for taking the time to speak with me today and sharing this wonderful, wonderful show. I am so excited about it. So I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you for having us.
My guests today have been the director Irvin Moss and the performer and artistic director Christopher Domig. They're part of Sea Dog Theater's presentation of Tuesdays with Maury, which is playing March 1st through the 23rd at St. George's Episcopal Church. That's at 209 East 16th Street. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting seadogtheater.org. And that's theater with an E-R. This is such a wonderful piece, a powerful show in a beautiful setting. You do not want to miss it. So make sure you head over to St. George's Episcopal Church, March 1st through the 23rd for Tuesdays with Maury. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.